welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Syke.
Good morning. Right.
Welcome to the show.
Well, I just wake up from a nap. So
old habits
like
are hard to break.
Me.
Yeah.
Well, this is live call-in radio. And as I've been told by many producers over time about other radio shows, a lot of guys who do this remotely log in at the last minute before the show starts.
There you go.
And that's one of those today here, since I'm not in studio.
Close the door, turn the key, go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, this is live call-in radio. You want to talk about the stock market, your investment portfolio? We have, that's what we're talking about. That's the discussion today here. All you have to do is dial the magic number, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And we'll be glad to talk with you. Paul, take your name, put it up on the board. We'll take a look at it. Let me just stay on subject. That's the only issue here today. 800-465-8770. We do have a week in review. It's prepped and ready to go. All you have to do is, if you're not on the list to get it, give us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put week in review in the subject line, first and last name in the body of the email, and you'll get your first copy. The rest of you who are on the nearly 900 some odd plus people who are there, you're going to get your copy on Monday, right, Perry?
That is correct. It will go out.
You're all set to have it go out. Okay. Well, one thing we do know about the local economy and actually the national economy is that, similar to the last decade, housing has been on a run. Not that they picked up and walked off the lot, but prices seem to have been in a marathon to see if they could stay ahead of the buyers. It's just been a seller's market for several years. And most people, if you already own real estate, are pretty happy about it.
Sure.
If you are trying to buy it, it's a different situation. And of course, if you bought into the house flipper mentality of the last decade and you thought you could do that this decade, well, that's not been quite so easy as Zillow found out.
Yeah, Zillow found out that they were, I mean, they're one of the premier real estate, retail real estate data websites in the world. And so it seems like a natural extension for them to say, well, we're going to get into this this house flipping thing because the real estate market is just booming. So this is a natural extension for us. Seemed like a perfect fit. It didn't work out quite that way.
So they created a whole ever separate company called iBuy, and they were buying properties. They'd fix them up and put them back on the market. Yet, in the process of doing that, they lost sight of their core business. And the stock got hammered by nearly 70% since its February high. The iBuyer program, just 3 short years after getting into the house flipping business, was put out to pasture.
It never worked from day one. It's really amazing. And it's the reason I thought this article was interesting was because it's another one of those processes where a company who has a huge amount of information about a specific part of the economy decided that they were going to leverage that in a way that had never been done before. And Zillow's iBuyer program had the only way it could work is if they were very good at finding out what the prices of houses were going to be in the near-term future. So this was all a forecast concept. And we've talked many, many times about what a disaster it is to try to forecast anything in the stock market. Well, it turns out that's true in any market where there's human beings involved, because there's so much more than just the numbers. And Zillow's program turned into an algorithm that was just crunching numbers and nothing else. And they were on the bad side of many, many purchases because they couldn't accurately predict, 3 to 6 months out in the housing market. No one can, especially a market this volatile. And it got them in big, big trouble. It's cost them a lot of money.
Well, anybody who's been involved in real estate for even a short period of time has heard that it is location, location, location.
Yep.
Another way to say that is real estate is always local. You just simply cannot draw inferences from one coast to the other and assume everything in between is going to work the same way. This reminds me of 2008. Linda was back in Kansas for medical treatment. She's living back there, and so I'm spending time back there and had some professional associates that I knew and visited them. And this was in the fall of 2008, the housing market was collapsing. Mm-hmm. Any place where it had had massive acceleration, Seattle is one of those. And one of my friends back in Kansas was buying a house. I'm saying, are you sure you want to do that in this market? He said, well, prices are falling. He said, hey, around here, prices never went up. This is the same thing it was selling for years ago. I mean, there's no population demand. We have, in the middle of flyover country, they have plenty of land to build more houses, kind of like Texas.
Yep.
You just add a subdivision on the edge, and all of a sudden you've got another 300 houses under construction. He says, prices haven't gone up, so I'm not worried about them falling. So it's local. It has to be, you have to understand the local market and the local drivers. And Zillow, as you said, Perry, is using an algorithm which does not know anybody.
Nothing. In fact, they thought that was going to be an advantage because their algorithm would just go out and forecast what the future price would be and then scan what the current prices are, and then it would go make purchases. And they knew nothing about the neighborhoods, the schools, nothing about how desirable the area was that these houses were in. They were just crunching numbers, and they ended up very, very far off base.
So they had planned on the millennials, which is a generation that is actually bigger than the boomers, who were drivers for many decades, economic drivers for decades. And they're assuming the millennials are going to be too. And the problem is that while they were starting family formation and wanting to have backyards for their kids to play in instead of city streets, the pandemic came along, and all of a sudden, nobody was doing anything. They weren't house shopping. They weren't visiting open houses. There was nobody. And yet, here's Zillow having spent millions of dollars to acquire inventory, and they are now stuck with it. Unlike car dealers, who, in a local market, have some ability to reduce inventory, because cars are a little more necessary than a house. If you already, assuming you already have one and just looking for a bigger, newer place, you don't need to go do that right away. So the pandemic upset the apple cart, so to speak, for Zillow. And, you know, there's a lot of paperwork to buy in a house.
If you've ever seen, if you made that trip to the down to the mortgage department there, yeah, you see people carrying around large stacks of paperwork all the time because it's a tough deal to get through. And you know, Zillow just didn't think that through. And what looked like something that just couldn't miss, this has got to be a great idea, just turned out to be a financial disaster for them. And, you know, that happens all the time in investing, where people look at things and say, well, this has to make money. There's no way it can't. And that's where you go invest. And then you find out, oh, no, there's all kinds of other alternatives the way this could go. It doesn't have to go the way I envisioned it. And it's very, really important to remember that. The narrative, no matter how good it is, doesn't mean it's true.
Well, with all the millennials coming in and all the money that was in the marketplace, they assumed that their iBuy proposition was going to be a lot like trading stocks on Robinhood.
But at
Robinhood, you only have a little bit of paperwork one time. That's all digital. You didn't have renovations. You didn't have title insurance. You don't have taxes and closing to deal with in order to get title. I mean, there's a lot of difference between a real estate property and buying a meme stock on Robinhood.
Right.
And they didn't quite think that one through.
Not quite enough. And it's amazing that a company like Zillow could get that wrong. But anybody can talk themselves into a situation where they think they have a market beaten. You know, look, we're going to just kill this thing. And there's usually something wrong with that. That's a difficult prospect if you think you're really going to own a market. And it's better to, measure twice and just cut once when you're heading into that process, because you can really get hurt.
Yeah, well, the motivation is a pretty common one. It's called greed.
That's it.
G-R-E-E-D.
That's it.
Look how much money we can make doing this. And they forget about the fundamentals. Have you really need a process and have you worked through all the things that can go wrong? That's just as I tell the guys in the financial advisors that I coach about what they're buying. And they're saying, you know, all this market's really high. It's the valuations, boy, man, these don't make any sense. They said, okay, but you look at the chart. The stuff makes sense from a spatial recognition standpoint on the chart. This is way, because charts define visually investor behavior. If you've developed the spatial recognition skills, you look at that chart and say, boy, I don't like the valuation, but the chart sure looks like we have buyers here. The bottom line is, how are you going to get out of this? And Zillow never figured that out until they were forced to. Where's your stop loss? How do you limit your loss? Because you don't want to do major damage to your capital. If you lose your capital, you are out of the game. So as we look at portfolios, as we look at the stock market, even though we have concerns about valuations, our portfolios are invested, but everything has a stop loss and a decision tree that's going to take us out of the position if it's not working. Our theme song should be something about own winners, sell losers. I mean, we want to own leaders. And there's no reason to hang on to laggards, losers, in your portfolio year after year after year because, quote, it's a good American company, end quote. It may be, but it's not. It may not be its time in life. And it could be like Zillow. And so the stock's down 70%. Do you care? You should.
You should care a lot. Just because real estate is doing well right now doesn't mean a real estate company is. And that's exactly what happened to Zillow. They kind of lost sight of where their bread and butter was. And when they tried to expand that, it just didn't go well. And again, it's tied to never try to forecast things. Track what's going on and don't try to make that prediction. The prediction is almost always going to sink your ship. And Zillow's become a prime example. We are at our first break of the day here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have monthly market updates. Our next one is scheduled for Saturday, December 4th at 9 a.m. You can register for that by going to irradio.com. That is irradio.com. Just head to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back with a link in it. And on December 4th, just click that link. You'll be live online with us, and you're going to be able to see our charts, see what we're talking about, and hopefully gain some clarity about what's going on in the market. We also always have plenty of time to get your questions in. We always get a lot of great questions on the webinars. You can send those in advance, if you like, to help@irradio.com. That's help@irradio.com, or you can just ask them that morning, December 4th. It's well worth your time. We'd be happy to see you there. If you have questions for us this afternoon, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help@irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
You got to know.
Well, this is the Investor Resources Live call-in radio show. If you want to talk about stock market investments in your portfolio, or your friendly neighborhood financial advisor has made a suggestion to you in your portfolio, you're not quite sure whether he's a fiduciary or a salesperson, you want a second opinion, give us a call here at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Well, at the top of the hour, one of the pieces of news that keeps rotating through is President Biden saying that the infrastructure bill is going to create, well, I'm not sure he used the word massive, but certainly encouraging amount of new employment, put people back to work. It raises a question. Just nobody in the administration is taking time to work this out. We currently have about 10 million job openings, for which very few people are showing up and saying, hire me, hire me. So the administration is going to add what they think are millions of new job opportunities with nobody standing in line to say, hire me, hire me, and we will be able to pay back $1 trillion without anybody coming out of pocket in the rest of the economy. I think that balance scale has somebody's thumb on it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful concept, but in reality, it's hard to see that that working out that way. There are people scrambling for people now, and if we initiate this this huge infrastructure bill, like they said, with millions of new jobs, there really is a legitimate question of who's going to fill the jobs. There are so many new ones potentially coming out there.
Well, we can't. Part of the unemployment situation, part of the lack of labor in some of it is because jobs are available in the area where we lack people with the appropriate skills.
Sure.
They don't have the technology training and stuff, and they just don't live nearby, and they may not have the money to pack up and leave. They don't want to move away from family, whatever. They've got reasons. The jobs aren't in there that they are suited for aren't in their community. And the fact that we borrow another $1 trillion from the rest of the world to create new contracts, to build new roads or fill potholes, whatever they plan on doing. Actually, what right. they're out of the money, they're really not spending much for road and bridges. It's about $110 billion for roads and bridges. And my guess is that doesn't go very far. And my guess is the federal government is going to decide which road and bridge needs to be patched.
Oh, you know, that's true. Sure.
Instead of letting the states and local communities say, hey, this is a priority over here. You know, we don't need that one on the other side of the state. We need this one taken care of. And then, of course, they don't like us driving cars. So $39 billion is going to go to mass transit to build mass transit lines through places where it's awkward to get to them. And
right,
when you get
right.
there, you have to hike a quarter mile or half a mile to get to where you want to go or call Uber. I guess you could call Uber, but they don't like Uber either. And we don't live in the Northeast Corridor, but a lot of wealthy people do. So they're going to spend $66 billion for rail services in the Northeast. We're going to spend $65 billion for broadband access because the government knows how to do things better than private industry.
Of course they do.
Of course.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Now, they do need to spend money on airports, $25 billion for airports. And, you know, that's appropriate federal money. $55 billion for water and wastewater systems. Once again, I'll bet they figure out which wastewater systems need to be dealt with instead of the states and local communities. And what is going to change the world in the infrastructure program is because we are not supposed to be driving gasoline or diesel fuel cars. They're going to spend $7.5 billion for electrical vehicle charging stations. When, if I am correct, now Perry, you may know this, and but I think that so far there's not a standard set of what is the plug supposed to look like and the voltage supposed to be to charge all these different car manufacturers'
models.
Not quite yet. That doesn't matter. We'll spend $7.5 billion, find out it was the wrong standard, and we'll just go borrow some more money from the world at large to rebuild it once it doesn't work. Now, there's government at work. You know, what the government does not create jobs. Private enterprise creates jobs. Government creates regulation. They create roadblocks. Oh, and one that comes to mind is look at all the environmental impact statements that are normally required to do anything of a major construction job. And yet when we had the massive earthquake, a decade or two ago in San Francisco, and the Bay Bridge collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
They rebuilt that bridge in 1 year because they said, we don't need all these regulations. We can just rebuild the bridge.
We got to build it. Yeah, exactly.
But now that the bridge is back up, guess what will happen now? They will rebuild all those regulations to keep you from building another project like that. I guess that does keep people employed. It's kind of like this infrastructure bill should be renamed the lawyer support bill, because the people who are going to receive the quickest benefit out of here are going to be the firms that are doing environmental impact statements, and then all the activist groups who say, not in my backyard, that environmental impact statement is just simply not sufficient. It didn't discuss and cover ABC, XYZ, STR. You want to name something? Now you just find an organization with some letters, an acronym of some sort, and they're going to say, NIMBY, not in my backyard. You didn't do that right.
Nobody wants it here. Hey, Don, we've got a couple calls on the board. We can probably squeeze those in before the break here. We got Danny in Las Vegas. How about that? Danny, you're on the air with Don and Perry. Hi. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, thank you. Appreciate it. Let me turn my radio down so there's no echo.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And out of courtesy for the people that are behind me waiting patiently in line to talk to you, I have a question. Do you believe or have a hunch that we may be in a financial bubble, if you would, because of all of this stereotypical free money in the form of stimulus? Because when it runs out, it's going to be bad. And will be the crash of it. But because remember in 2008 and 2009, everyone that got in on the subprime mortgage lending fiasco, how bad of a price they paid and how much they had to learn from it. So, I mean, I am no pundit. I'm a college graduate and I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I don't know. I mean, prices of homes are going up, and I don't know if that's just because of the over-elevated value because of that extra money that's being pumped into the system. But it's going to have to come to an end, to quote Ronald Reagan, because we can't keep spending and spending and borrowing and borrowing with impunity.
Well, Danny, you're right about that. Some of your basic assumptions are absolutely correct. That the one difference between the household and the business is that government can continue to borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow until doomsday happens, and then everything collapses. This time around in the housing market is not quite the same. There are some similarities, but we are not seeing evidence of the robo-signers on mortgages, and the house flipping business is radically different than it was back then. However, what has kept the housing market alive and growing, one is we have had demographic demand interrupted by the pandemic, but the Fed keeping interest rates next to zero has kept mortgage rates really cheap. And as long as people have had enough of a down payment or a sufficient income, mortgage financing has been available and affordable. Now, as prices get higher, then the down payment's larger and the mortgage balance is larger, so the payment's larger. And that's put a squeeze on the millennials, and they have backed out of the market. Demand shows signs of softening there. So that that bubble, if you will, is not the same type of bubble that we had back in the lead up to the 06-07 market top there. With regard to stocks, corporate profits have been very good. Now, corporate profit growth is slowing.
Uh-huh.
Can you argue that there's a bubble in stocks? And the answer is yes, you can argue that. We do not believe that we have the same kind of factors yet that led to the technology bubble. Now, the bubble in stocks in 08 was not really bubble in stocks. It was bubble in housing. It was excess debt with insufficient equity standing behind it. And it's just like we talked about Zillow earlier. Once the companies that were funding all that stuff couldn't do it anymore, then there's the domino effect. And right now we don't have that. We don't have the catalyst for the domino effect. But there will be an end to it. There always is. And that's why when we talk about portfolio structure, as I mentioned in the last segment, you need to know where your stop losses are. It's easier in the stock market than it is in the housing market. Perry, you want to add anything to that?
Just that Danny was asking about all the stimulus money, too, and there's going to be some repercussions there also. They're completely unknown at this time. Don't know where those are going to pop up. But whenever there is a huge amount of money dumped into an economy,
if you'd like to make a call,
things end up having trouble when that gets shut down. There is going to be something there when that happens. Whenever somebody, you know, pulls away the proverbial punch bowl, people get upset and things begin to happen. There's just no telling where that's going to be right now, which is why you cannot even relax in this market. You've got to be on top of it all the time, looking for what's going on because it changes so quickly.
Yeah, that's a good question, Danny. Thanks for your call. Give us a call back, but we are up against a break here, and Jim, we are going to take your call as soon as we come back from this break.
Okay. We are, we'd like to remind you, we do have our Week in Review. It's a weekly email newsletter that takes a look at what's gone on this week in the news, gives you a good idea about what's important and what you can safely ignore. And if you'd like to start receiving that email, newsletter on Monday, send us an email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name. We'll get you in the system, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. That's another really good piece. You can unsubscribe from that at any time, and it works, but people rarely do. It's a valuable little freebie, the Week in Review. You are listening to Investor Resources Radio here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at iriradio.com and log on for a free report. That's iriradio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770.
A miniature walked in the joint. See, you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking.
Well, I don't know about the last part, but it's big spender. That's what we have in charge of the federal government right now. And it's money that has to be borrowed in an environment that has inflation and a shortage of labor. And we have reached a point, I think, where the inflation is no longer transitory, because wages have been pushing up, and it's really hard to unwind those. It takes years and a major collapse. That's what Danny was referring to. And when that happens, then wages can get cut and this stuff can be unwound a bit. But for now, we have Jim on the line with the question. Jim, you are on the air.
Yes, hello. I wanted to get your opinion on investing into some of these mining companies that actually mine the, like, battery anodes for lithium, and, you know, one of the minerals would be like cobalt. And I was wondering what your take is on investing in some of these actual mining companies that they're going to be needing all this mass amount of minerals to go forward with their plan here on all these batteries and stuff to be produced.
Part of this is always a function of what's your time horizon, because the plan is all of us who drive carbon fueled cars are going to be forced to drive one of the others. And technology is going to improve. So we would expect demand to increase over time. But that's a fairly long window. We are not anywhere close to having capacity to meet the carbon zero targets that so many governments around the world have set for themselves and for us. I mean, they're not setting them for themselves. They're imposing it on us. So we, in our portfolios, we've actually owned lithium from time to time. We don't own anything forever on a thematic basis. I mean, what you're talking about is a commitment to a theme that is going on in the green energy push within our society. And as if you're a long-term investor with this, I think there's some real profits that will be made over time, but they also come with a lot of volatility. You mentioned cobalt. That's also one of those that's in high demand, will be in higher demand. The problem with a lot of this stuff is that the country that we just vacated, I think, is the country with the largest source of these very rare minerals that are needed. So we're waiting for China, apparently, to go in and build the mines if, in fact, the Afghanis will let them bring in the equipment and destroy their deserts to get the minerals out. We have no idea how that's going to happen. China has some big reserves of these rare minerals.
And the main thing, Don, though, is it really is a matter of timing. Like you said, that's the key. I was just looking at lithium, which is up 30% year to date. It's also been down 26% during the year this year. So it's very, very volatile. So you have to decide when you should own it and when you shouldn't. And that's got to be driven by the trend and the price and not by the narrative, because the narrative says, again, this is another one where, well, you really can't lose here. There's all this battery production. They need lithium everywhere, and cobalt, and some other very tough to mine minerals. So we should buy those. But because there's a need out there, it doesn't mean they're going to be profitable right now. So you really need to watch the pricing, watch the trend, and use that, and not the narrative of well, the batteries industry has to grow, therefore I'm going to buy these, because it could be years before they're making any money on the stock side.
Yeah, there are a number of ETFs that are kind of oriented towards this. One, as Perry just mentioned, is lithium, LIT. There's another one, BAT, B-A-T-T. But they own other companies that are related to the whole issue as opposed to just strictly a minerals move. The major exchange-traded fund that is in materials is XLB, as in Baker Building, and that had a nice run this last week. It actually set a new high. If you go back and look at the Dow Jones Commodity Chemicals Index, it set a new high, and so it was driven up as a result of aluminum, copper, a number of the basic core building materials that are necessary in our current economy. I don't know if it owns any of the rare metals in there. I didn't take a look. I happen to be doing my end of week report and saw this move. And we've talked about it during the week with different advisors around the country who have asked about being in it or not, because it's at an all-time high. Should you buy it now? Well, part of this bid up, my guess, is related to the infrastructure bill is coming. The question that we were just addressing a moment ago is, how soon will it actually be spending money on real construction and actually need that stuff? Mm-hmm. We don't know that. You end up with things like Rivian, which had a massive IPO this week. They're going to require electric batteries and big ones to drive trucks. And clearly they need more battery innovation so that they charge faster and have longer lives, so you don't have to stop in Moses Lake overnight to get a recharge to get all the way to Spokane. I mean, that's a little inconvenient, but it's good for Moses Lake, tourist business.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my personal take is in order to even to get to that point, you have to, the minerals have to be mined, and it'll be speculative at first, but it just seems that although it is a very high risk, that some of this money or investor money will be going into these rare mineral mines to produce the batteries. If they, in fact, somebody signs a, multi whatever contract on so many batteries. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm looking into it too much, but it just seems like that would be a good play. A lot of the stocks that I've seen that cover these minerals, the ones I'm looking at, are high-risk stocks, but they do have, a presence in mines around the world, and not just Afghanistan, but there's nothing there, obviously, but like Ontario, Australia.
Sure.
But it just seems like it would be a risky play, but it could pay off.
Well, you just defined it.
It's
speculative and risky, and so that's a function of how much of your capital are you willing to put at risk in that kind of risk, and how long is your time frame before you expect to cash in. And you have to weigh those factors yourself. For us as fiduciary investors, we don't make those kinds of plays because they are very high risk and very long term. And we have, our mantra, we just keep repeating Warren Buffett's rule one, don't lose money. And rule two is remember rule one. And so that kind of drives the way we run our portfolios. But you're thinking in the right line. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with your logic. I've been down that road. I don't know offhand any companies that are actually focused on that. You've done that research. I've done very little in that area. I mean, I have looked at some of the stuff. One of the areas you didn't mention that green energy should be looking at is uranium. I mean, uranium is really clean energy, but again, we're back to not in my backyard. So, I don't expect to see, even though that's your, Perry, you just mentioned the run-up in lithium, uranium kind of did the same thing.
Sure.
But it also had a big downside volatility during the year. So as long as you're willing to live with the volatility and find out you're underwater and maybe underwater for months, a year or two, and you're still okay with the long-term scenario, then, that's your allocation of what you want to do. Jim.
A portion of my it's not a, I'm not betting the farm, but I'm just percentage of my high risk portfolio.
Okay, well, if you want to bet the farm, you might call Zillow. I understand that they are.
Yeah.
Oh no, they've quit buying. Yeah. They've quit buying. Okay, thanks for the call, Jim. Glad to have you out there. That opens up another line. You want to give us a call? 800-465-8770. Those are two good calls. Both of them are thinking about stuff that's really, really important here.
Right now, you bet. Yep.
He didn't mention one of the metals that's more commonly on a caller's mind is gold. it seems like every time we touch on this, I have to say this. Back in June of 11, when we were on the air on another station, we said it's time to get out of gold. It has hit a peak in demand, and the prices here are headed down. Now, if you're a thematic investor and you believe in gold and the country is going to go bankrupt from 2011, it was going to go bankrupt shortly. Well, we aren't, it hasn't happened yet, but it's increasingly the odds are that we could. Gold has some rallies and then it fades. Because theoretically, if inflation is rising, people think gold is the appropriate hedge. Now, statistically, if you go back and look at periods of inflation, gold is not highly correlated to inflation. It had a really good run back in the 70s, and that's what we remember. But that's not consistent over time, and it certainly is not happening this time. When you take a look at the central banks, like the Fed, European Central Bank, Bank of Japan, Reserve Bank of Australia, the Bank of Canada, those are all the central banks that control their monetary policy and their currencies. And then you look at the big institutional buyers, think J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. They're not buying gold in spite of this inflation. If anything, they have probably shifted that money to cryptos. And so the normal money flow that would be pushing gold higher is not there.
And that's a big deal. Yeah, institutions used to own enough gold to really push the market around. And if institutionally they were increasing their gold purchases, that would be enough to move the price. And if they were selling it, they could lower the price. And now they actually own so little that it's of no consequence to the market. And like you said, a lot of people have moved on to cryptocurrencies saying, you know what, gold's yesterday's currency. Cryptocurrency is the currency of the future, so I'm going to own that. And all of those things combined to really really put gold in a situation now where it really doesn't have much influence on the economy at all.
Well, I just mentioned 2011 when we said you should get out of the gold position. The major banks, major institutional owners of gold at the time, over the next 3 years, reduced their gold holdings by 25%.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, they did have a little bit of buying afterwards, but right now, if you take a look at major institutions, the amount of gold that they are holding is almost non-existent. I mean, it's so small, the allocation hardly even warrants mentioning.
No, it's not. So, they don't spend a lot of time on it. They don't spend money on it. And if they have it, it's because they have funds that are specific to gold. And outside of that, they don't own it for anything else. So it's the nature of purchasing it has really changed significantly on the institutional side. And that used to be the big block buyer and seller. So that market has changed significantly, and something big would have to change to drive it back up again to where it was. We are up against our last break.
Okay.
Yep. We should get out here, take our last break of the afternoon here. I'd like to remind you that we're having our next market update Saturday, December 4th at 9 a.m. And you can register for that at IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. If you have questions for us this afternoon, we still have plenty of time to get your question on the board. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at IRIRadio.com. That's help at IRIRadio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Yeah, that detour can come right out of the left side somewhere. I mean, it catches you by surprise. And that's basically the risk that Jim is exposed to when he says he's making a commitment to a lot of those rare mineral stocks. You just don't know what's going to happen. It's going to upset the apple cart, whether it's legislation, border shut down, transportation not available. I mean, there's lots of things that go wrong in the mining business and the delivery stuff. And then back to the issue that Danny asked about whether or not we're in a bubble. And I said that you can certainly build the case for that. However, corporate profits are still persisting, even though the growth rate is slowing, and that eventually catches up. What's actually going to happen in the market, either with those rare minerals, with more standardized metals, copper and so on, or the market, the bottom line is, we don't know, because that happens tomorrow or starting Monday, and we don't know what's going to happen on Monday or any Monday thereafter.
Exactly. We can't know, in fact, and that's the important part to keep in mind, is that as much as you think you know what's coming up, no one really does.
So how is it possible anyone knows the future?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't. You make a bet. I mean, everything that you put in the market is a bet. And you're betting on probabilities. What are your inputs that improve your probabilities? What are the inputs that detract from your probabilities? And you weigh those, and you make a decision. And then you hope for the best. And for most investors, particularly if you take a thematic approach, as the lithium and rare earth metal issue is, then how long are you committed to that when it's not working?
Sure.
For us as fiduciary managers, if it's not working, we don't want to hang on to it. There was something wrong. We didn't get the probabilities right. And so the issue is, as Warren Buffett says, don't take losses. Keep your losses small and let your winners run. If it's working for you, hang on to it. If it's not working, get it out of the basket.
Just look at Zillow again. I mean, here they have a very, very public disaster on their hands, and they said, you know what? We just have to get out of this. We just have to go away. We were wrong. We were wrong big time. We are losing money, and we are not in the business of, you know, losing a little bit on every transaction, but making it up in quantity. It doesn't work that way. So if it's working against you, you have to get rid of it.
And so with regard to Zillow, what did they do? They sold to another major buyer. There was this was one transaction. And what is that company going to do? One, they get to buy them for cheaper than Zillow did, most likely. And they're going to convert them into rentals. They're not house flippers.
They're not trying to flip them, right.
They're in the rental business. So they just got a whole bunch of cheap inventory with one escrow closing, if you will.
Correct.
Well, that's a sweet deal for them.
It's good for them. And Zillow wanted out of that business. And so now it's working for them. They're done with that. And they're like, okay, don't do that again, whatever you do. So they get to move on to something else. But the step one, cut your losses short. And so they did.
So one of the other questions is how high can oil go? Well, there's been a lot of speculation that it'll hit $100 this year. And will it go to 150? We don't know. What I do know is that I filled up my gas tank the other day at $3.99, 0.99 or something like that. I mean, I'm just a tenth of a penny short of $4. When was the last time I did that? I was in Kansas City in 2008 and 9, and it was $4. And then it dropped to, I don't know what the low was. It was a buck something. But it is, it's back up at $4.
Yep.
And the issue is, that's inflationary, and it hurts everybody, and it especially hurts lower and middle income households.
Correct.
Just like food costs are going up. And there's nothing that the government can do to bring these things down. The Fed can't do it, and the federal government's not going to do it. There is pressure on the administration to access the strategic oil reserves. Well, the amount of oil that they would release will cover U.S. consumption for, it's something like 3 to 4 days. That is not going to change the price of oil.
It's not even a Band-Aid. Yeah, that's not enough to do anything.
And with the government's foresight, the administration is considering closing down the pipeline from Canada, which provides jet fuel, gasoline, natural gas, a bunch of energy for the northern Midwest. And I think it's St. Louis Airport gets its jet fuel from Canada. And the administration wants to close that pipeline, which is all part of the we need to be green energy country. And if we're going to be green, we'll quit providing carbon-based fuels and force people to fly the jets with solar power.
Back onto the trains, because there aren't jets with solar power yet. So,
yeah, well, and, you know, the Amtrak business has not been doing well for several decades across the country. This is crazy administration. There is nothing that is being done to solve these problems that the government can do except get out of the way and let business make the adjustments that need to be made so that stuff starts flowing. Now, building out new ports, that would make sense, but that doesn't solve anything near term. Building out airports so we have better airports than other countries around the world, that makes sense, but that doesn't solve this problem either. So the inflation is not going away, in our opinion. That's not a forecast. That's just we're looking at the stuff and say, how do you fix this stuff? Well, you fix it with more supply. What we don't need is more borrowing. That just simply takes money out of the private sector where it could be, well, if it's not effectively deployed, private sector stops the project, just like Zillow saying, hey, this isn't working. This doesn't make sense to pour more money in it.
You fix it or you go under. You don't just go on losing money decade after decade like they do in Washington, D.C.
Government says that project didn't work. We didn't spend enough on it. We need to go back and spend more money, and that'll fix it. Well, if you had a bad plan to begin with, adding money to a bad plan isn't resolution. It's plain stupid. Mm. And that's part of the issue with running a portfolio. You do not know how your portfolio is going to work. What we do have pretty firm information looking over the last couple of decades is that the bond market turmoil of this last week was disastrous for big investors in bonds. The big hedge funds, who are major players in the bond market, got their wallets turned upside down. Now, it's not usually the way you say a problem like that, but that's more or less what happened.
Yeah,
they took big losses. The issue in portfolio construction and risk management is normally bonds. The assumptions about bonds, which have been valid for nearly 40 years, are no longer valid. And so people using big bond allocations to manage risk are going to find their wallets turned upside down as we continue to borrow money and have no way or plan to actually pay it back. What needs to happen that would stop this inflation and stop the bubble-like appearances in the market is for the Fed not to wait to raise interest rates, but to do so now. But they're not even going to quit funding the bond market. I mean, they're going to cut back $15 billion a month. That's a drop in the bucket. Until Mr. Powell knows if he's getting fired, I don't think he's going to make any material change that would upset investors at the present time. If you don't get our weekend review, send us an email, help@irradio.com, help@irradio.com. Put your first and last name in the body of the email, weekend review in the subject line, and we will add you to the distribution list. If you don't like it, it's easy to click the unsubscribe button, and you will never get another one from us. Sign up for our December stock market update at irradio.com, irradio.com, webinar registration, lower left corner. Want to talk to us in the week? It's 800-317-9119. Lord willing, we'll be back next week.